Today is September 16th, 2015. This is episode number 324 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, chief sleep deprivation tester. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, please shoot us a note at ACM at macobserver.com.
I'm so glad that that you could be here for the show, Mr. Sleepyhead.
It's not that I didn't have sleep. It was sleep in short chunks.
And at the wrong times.
At the wrong times. So I'm like, just, I don't know, whatever. This is gonna be the worst podcast episode you've ever listened to. You might as well just turn this off right now.
You know, I've heard some pretty bad shows over the years. I'm not saying our shows, but just in general. And we're going to have to work really hard to go below those.
We can do it, though.
We're professionals.
We are professionals. Speaking of writing emails and stuff and talking to us, Lauren Sims, we've heard from Lauren before. She wrote to us a couple of weeks ago. She said, I love iTunes, which, you know, a clear indication that she's not well. Maybe she had some sleep deprivation issues too.
You know, I love the tone of voice you used, where you're just assuming that the statement is being made with a hefty dose of snark.
Oh, no.
Like, hey, Brian, I love iTunes.
She included hearts. She actually loves iTunes. She goes, it stores and organizes all of my music and videos and podcasts and serves them all up very nicely to my Apple TV and my AirPort Express and the speakers I have connected to it. Sync needs work, but that's a minor quibble. She doesn't actually mention the thing that I hate about it, which is the interface.
The interface may be working just fine for her.
I'm not going to back down from that. That's true. Maybe it does. It absolutely is subjective. And to be fair, iTunes hating is not universal. Lauren is an excellent indication of that.
Yeah, Dave Hamilton is totally fine with iTunes.
He is. Yes, he is. I find that suspect, but he is. Pauline Baird wrote, Jeff and Brian together again. This was after I got back from my vacation.
Witness protection program.
We're still vacation. Calling it a vacation.
Right. Vacation.
All is well in my world. Great shows, guys. Great show, guys. Thank you so much.
That's awesome.
Like, it totally made. I wrote her back at the time that she just completely made my day.
That's totally awesome. I'm feeling all warm and fuzzy.
Oh yeah, totally.
Right now,
totally. Well, let me see if I can't fix that. Grant Gillespie had some other things to say. He said, "Really enjoyed the last show. This would have been."
Feeling hugs and warm and fuzzy.
Last week's show. He liked last week's show. He said, "Really enjoyed the last show, even though the day had taken its toll." So we're heading south already. "And hopefully you've rethought these things. When Jobs said stylus was a fail, he meant just to use the device, period. Idiots love to take Jobs out of context. And I know Jeff got there in the end, but you know what they say about arguing with idiots. It was a long day, I know." Now, I think he's calling you an idiot. But it could be, he should be calling me an idiot. I was the one who was on a soapbox about that.
Well, there's, thanks to the magic of pronouns, there's just enough vagary that I don't know who is being called an idiot here. And
I suspect one of the two of us.
Well, I do suspect it is one of the two of us. That's very, very likely. However, I just have a hard time picturing you as an idiot, Brian.
I don't have that problem at all. And here's the deal. Mr. Gillespie's absolutely correct. Steve Jobs was talking about the fact that the comedy he's talking about is Steve Jobs saying that we've got 10 of them on the end of our fingers. Gookadookadoo. This is talking about styluses. and how that's the only time I've ever applied that particular insulting tone to Steve Jobs was that comment, because that comment makes me mad. But Mr. Gillespie is right. He's talking about using the device. You should be able to use the device with your fingers. You shouldn't need a stylus to use it. That is what Steve Jobs meant.
Right. Yep, that's exactly what he meant.
The problem is, and the reason why I take such offense at that comment from Mr. Jobs is that Apple took styluses out of the Apple Store. That while he's talking about using the device, in practice, Apple is denying the reality that styluses have purposes beyond using the device. That Apple was actively denying the reality that we use a stylus for art.
Yes, that's absolutely true. Also for music editing.
Yeah, that was something Rick Allen said. Now, we have more from Gillespie, mm-hmm. Mr. Gillespie, though, before we get to that. So I get what he's saying, but I actually think that he's wrong. I think that I personally believe that Steve Jobs was right only in one way about styluses, and that Apple should have embraced the stylus as a tool for art and other kinds of creative manipulation, and that pulling him out of the Apple Store was a huge mistake. And the reason why they pulled him out of the Apple Store is because they felt that it was at odds with their statement about not needing a stylus to use the thing. That's the thing that we didn't mention that last week, but that is why they came out of the Apple Store. That's why I get so mad. Is because having styluses was at odds with the idea that you didn't need one. That's stupid. It is stupid thinking.
I agree. It was a mistake to take styluses out of the store. And, I mean, look at the stylus market. People are buying styluses like crazy. There's new models coming out all the time. I'm always getting excited about new styluses.
I've got a better way of thinking about that, Jeff. Look at how useful an iPad is for art. Oh, you need a stylus for art. For some art.
Yeah. Yeah, for the art that I do on my iPad. And yes, I will let everyone use that term very loosely. I cannot do it without a stylus. Yeah. And there are specific styluses that I need depending on what I'm doing. So it's not like there's a one ring for styluses.
The pencil might.
I actually have several I use all the time.
The pencil might change that. We don't know yet. But before we get to Rick Allen and his comments about the pencil, I have one more way to phrase this. Steve Jobs was talking about interacting with a device and the need of a stylus to manipulate device. Yes, he was. But Apple, through Steve, or Steve through Apple, let that message get confused with practical reality of other uses for a stylus. That's the thing that makes me mad. Okay, I'm done with that.
It is frustrating. Now, the fact that we cannot figure out which one of us is being identified as an idiot is probably pretty telling about both of us.
It's true. And Mr. Gillespie was not. This is a very, very nice letter that he wrote.
Yeah,
he was bagging on what we were saying, but I don't think he was bagging on us personally. We're just having a little fun with it. And he also noted that the quote from the event was iPad Pro has more pixels than the 15-inch Retina MacBook Pro. It's phenomenal. I can't remember what nonsense we said where he's correcting us on that. I'm sure that he's right, though. He said that he thinks it was nice that Apple waited until Surface was officially dead to release the keyboard cover and pencil. They really were kind to Microsoft rather than let everybody see iPad Pro and accessories outselling the machine that runs everything. That's funny.
Yes, actually.
Very, very funny. They said either here or on Taos. Is that the that's the show you do with Adam?
Yeah, the iOS show.
The iOS show, thank you. Yeah, he said, love to hear if Jeff has experimented with the stylus on MacBook or even iMac using Inkwell. I think it's Inkwell is what he's talking about.
Inkwell. Should be Inkwell. Actually, yes. Yes, I have.
And he says it's clunky and the lag is pretty grim. Still works on iMac, though, albeit with Force.
Okay, so what I did was with MacBook Pro. using the built-in trackpad, but then also using a Wacom tablet and stylus. Mm. And what I found was that when I used Inkwell with the stylus on the trackpad, doing it with my finger on the trackpad was an exercise in futility.
Sure.
But using a stylus, it worked, but the latency was pretty bad, and the resolution I don't know if it was because of the resolution or the latency, but parts of what I was drawing weren't coming up, meaning I would draw an arch, but in many cases it would look like a clunky series of lines strung together. So it wasn't a smooth curve. When I used Inkwell with my Wacom tablet, however, the performance was markedly better. I was able to draw. I was able to write words, and it's still weird to use a tablet while you're writing and you can't see anything without looking at a separate display. That's something that's always been an issue for me. Yeah, it works, and it isn't something I want to do every day, but it works well enough that I have, upon occasion, used Inkwell with messages to draw quick sketches or diagrams for people, because it was just easier to send them that than to do an extended, like, multi-paragraph text to show them where to find where the battery is inside their laptop or whatever.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So it's I found it to be useful, but it's not something that's useful for me every single day.
Yeah, and that's actually a little more positive than what Mr. Gillespie was saying. And Grant, thanks for very, very much for writing into us. Rick Allen also noted, he said that he loved the podcast today. Thank you kindly. But he had some more ideas about Apple Pencil uses. I think you might have wanted to mention editing audio. He said the fine tip will allow selecting and moving regions of audio around without all the crazy pinch and zoom in and out that you have to use today. Also, pin-based shortcuts, like were shown in the keynote, to select a region and make an X to cut it. That actually would be really cool.
That's really cool. Add to that video editing, because the same editing techniques and precision that you need for audio, you'll need for video. Also, architects and people that are working in CAD-based apps.
Yeah.
Styluses have long been used for those applications. Being able to do that directly on an image on an iPad Pro, that's going to be a really big thing.
Yeah, it could be a game changer for folks. And then he said, also thinking about pressure sensitivity allows many options to basic audio editing, press down and drag regions around, etc., which would be great. And he said drawing EQ curves or velocity transitions, and the list goes on and on. Great comments. We have the best listeners. Thank you very much. And if you need to take us to task, please do.
If you need to take us to task, remember, it's Brian's fault.
Usually true. And what is it? ACM at MacObserver.com? Or you can tweet us. I'm TMO Brian, I think. It's Brian with a Y.
Yeah, you're TMO Brian with a Y. And I'm Jay Gamut.
Yeah, I wonder how many people have actually tried to tweet at TMO BRYANWITHAY.
I'm going to guess none, because listeners are not idiots.
That's right.
Yeah. You know, sometimes I wonder if our listeners tune into the show not for our insights, but because it makes them feel better about themselves.
Oh, yeah.
So you can say, well, at least we're not them.
We're like a passive aggressive self-help show. Well, at least we're not those guys.
Well, I guess you have to take your therapy where you can get it.
Yeah. Yes, you do. All right. Well, that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you want to...
And passive-aggressive self-therapy session.
I kid. We do have more to say.
Oh, I was about to wrap up. Yeah. Okay.
Apple TV. We didn't get to the Apple TV last week. We ran out of time.
Which is really surprising. I mean, we had a whole hour to talk.
Do you remember anything about this thing that Apple announced? It's been a week.
Sure. Okay, here's the quick rundown.
Okay.
So after, what was it, 3 years of waiting for an update to the Apple TV, mm-hmm. it was announced we don't get it until October. The new Apple TV will come in two configurations, 32 and 64 gigabytes of storage, with third-party app support.
Oh, that's awesome.
And, yeah, that's awesome. A lot of what Apple showed off was gaming. And they showed using this redesigned remote where it has a combination of buttons, like physical buttons, and a touch-sensitive surface. So you can do gestures on the surface.
And a motion sensor.
Oh, and it has a motion sensor. Also IR so that it can control your television. So you can turn your television on and off and change the volume on your television from this remote. So that's kind of cool. It will work as a gaming remote console, whatever thingy. So the Apple TV that Apple showed off, they didn't come right out and say, we want a big piece of the console gaming market. But that's kind of the message that they delivered.
Well, and they could have even said it this way. We already own mobile gaming, and now we're ready to move into the living room, finally.
Yeah, that's the message that they were sending. Now, I'm not expecting to see Xbox 360 level games, meaning something that needs that level of processor horsepower.
From the Apple TV standpoint, from a gaming standpoint, the Apple TV is targeting casual gamers, not Call of Duty, Halo, anything that needs a controller, like a real controller, you know, with like a crap ton of buttons and things like that.
Although it wouldn't surprise me if some companies figure out how to make traditional style controllers for Apple TV.
Well, undoubtedly, actually, I completely agree with you. That could happen, but if such controllers are coming from third parties, they will be niche. The Apple TV is still not going to be beating PlayStation or Xbox for the polygon pushing first person shooters. It's just not
probably not.
I mean, it's And for a lot of reasons. I mean, and for one thing, there's only 32 or 64 gigs of storage is nothing.
Yes. However, that storage, from what I understand, isn't used constantly by the games you own.
Well, yeah, but if
you need to have an internet connection so that when you launch a game, parts of it actually download every time you play.
Fair enough. And that alone might well keep it from being. Part of my point here is that the really, really rich first person shooters, the hardcore gaming stuff that consoles have owned for all these years, those need a lot of storage. I don't know. The Apple TV is not going to be beating the dedicated consoles at hardcore gaming. It's just not. I don't think Apple wants it to. I don't think Apple has any intention of trying.
No, this looks to me like the device that could eventually make Nintendo just throw their hands in the air and give up on the Wii.
Like they just don't care. Yeah, it could. It's like that. It's going to. You're. This could put a hurt on Nintendo, or it could turn Nintendo into a software-only company for real. Yo.
It could. So right now, I'm holding off on buying a Wii U. I've been a Wii fan for a long time. And I haven't bought a Wii U because I wanted to see what was happening with Apple TV. And if I can get the games that I enjoy playing, and this probably says a lot about me, but I love playing Lego Batman and Lego Star Wars on the Wii.
Mm-hmm.
If I can get those on Apple TV, then I have to really seriously think about whether or not I want to buy that Wii U.
Yeah, fair enough. And there's going to be plenty of room for consoles to continue to compete with something like Apple TV. I mean, you know, Microsoft has got its various things where the cameras are watching you. Mm-hmm. And you were the controller.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's the whole Kinect thing.
Yeah. I mean, there's the but from a casual gaming standpoint, I think that Apple's going to become a significant player in the living room with this device. And it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, it is. Now, the question that I have, which I don't have an answer to yet, what happens when I want to play a game like, say, Lego Batman with someone else? Can they use their iPhone as the second controller, or do they have to use a second Apple remote?
I thought that they said specifically the iPhones.
Well, they did, but I think it may also be dependent on the game. It's still a little vague.
Yeah, well, I mean, yes, but it's not like a developer is going to release a two-player game without taking that into consideration.
Right. So, and so if I'm using my iPhone as a secondary controller, when I play games, can I use my iPhone or an iPod Touch as a game controller if I'm a single player? Do I have to use just the Apple
remote? Yeah, that I was confused on too. So yeah, we don't have an answer to that. Yeah. So it's a good thing that we're doing a podcast.
I know, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Top men,
right here, two of them.
Yep. Now, that said, I'm really, really excited about this. And when I buy mine, I'm just going to go all out and get the 64 gig model. And here I am, the guy that's so casual with gaming that I actually piss off casual gamers. And the great thing is you're laughing because you totally understand.
I do.
Yeah. And here I am excited about the potential for gaming on Apple TV. So that kind of says a lot.
Fair enough. So I wish, by the way, that it came with 128 gig option.
I think that would be nice. Like, I'm not sure why it doesn't. I mean, is it just a cost thing, or is this something?
Yeah, why not have another model? Why not? Yeah, that's true. Right. It's possible. It's possible that I'm thinking in terms that don't apply.
Yeah. And we don't know for sure yet.
Right. We don't know. We just don't know for sure. So we'll have to see. It does seem like, though, a device designed to store. I know that one of the things I'm thinking about is the future in Apple's and the unannounced streaming TV service. I want for there to be a DVR service that goes along with that.
That would be awesome.
And if there's going to be a DVR service that goes along with that, I want for it to have more storage. I mean, 128 gigs wouldn't be enough. And unless Apple ends up doing something where it's a DVR service, but what the DVR service does is tag recordings that are on Apple servers.
So it's really on demand.
Yeah, it's on demand, but from a TiVo-like approach.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
That would possibly work incredibly well. But you know, like if
you know, it would eliminate the issue that can happen at times when you're doing DVR stuff, where if there's a problem with the stream as it comes into your television, that's what you're recording. And so, so you're not going to be recording a bad image or screwed up audio, anything like that. You're getting just the straight high definition recording.
Right. Yeah. Right. And there's a lot of, we don't know. We have no idea if that's what Apple's going to do. We don't even know if Apple's streaming service is going to include DVR functionality. In my opinion, it should. In my opinion, it needs to. I've wanted Apple to make a DVR forever. So, mm-hmm. I don't know what I'm trying to say.
What you're saying is you really hope that's something they announce and it works in a cool way.
Correct. Correct. And I certainly hope it works with the paltry storage that they're giving us, if they're going to give us this paltry storage. And I do expect the service to be announced sometime next year, and I do expect it to be announced for the hardware that's going to ship in October.
I'm totally with you. Yep. I think that's exactly what's going to happen. And I'm looking forward to seeing it. If it's really good, I may finally be in a position where I'm willing to pay for television again. I would just pay Apple for that television.
There's so much good show. Man, Defiance this year has been amazing.
I have
Defiance
heard that.
Is just... I've talked about Defiance with you. This is a show on sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, post-apocalyptic world. There's alien races that have come to Earth not knowing that it was inhabited by intelligent beings, or maybe not caring. And they have begun to... and they use the term terraform, which you can't terraform Terra.
Because it's already formed.
Because it's already formed.
It would be more like terror restructuring. The fact that this bothers you so much is awesome.
It makes me so angry. The idea of aliens terraforming the Earth. See, here's the deal. Terra is the Latin name for Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And in sci-fi circles, Terra is often the future name of the Earth.
Right.
And terraforming is making another planet Earth-like.
Yes.
So aliens would not come in and terraform. Aliens would come in alien form.
Right. Yeah. If they're
aliens, want to make our world like theirs, not our.
If Vulcans came here, mostly they could Vulcan form Earth.
They could fucking Vulcanize Earth.
They could Vulcanize Earth. Yeah.
So I know that I'm mostly pedantic.
Now, the awesome thing is, and Brian, just so you know, when you have this discussion with me, it does not bother me at all, because it's always entertaining. But listeners, the conversation about aliens coming to Earth and terraforming is something that Brian and I have had several times.
This drives me nuts. Despite this enormous thing that I whine about all the time, I love the show. It's a great show. That is just one of the great shows on TV right now. There's a couple of other shows on sci-fi that are also good. I'm enjoying Dark Matter, and I'm enjoying Killjoy. Enjoying Killjoys.
Killjoys. I watched the pilot of that. Does it get better?
It does.
Okay, because at the end of the pilot, I was like, I don't care about any of these characters. And why doesn't Bobby just start freezing stuff?
And what's up with the fake accent?
Yeah. And
eyes are up here. the fake British accent that sort of drives me nuts. Nowhere near as bad as the young lady in Dark Matter, who says, because we're dangerous, with a slight lisp. And that like was, anyway.
And at that point, like, you don't believe there's any danger at all.
Exactly. And I'm just going to start obsessing here, or I'm going to start expressing my obsession. Anyway, those are of the Defiance, then Dark Matter, then Killjoys. Those are three of the great shows on TV right now. There's so much great TV. We live in this golden age of TV, and you're letting most of it pass you by. That was my point.
You know, I've been seeing some awesome shows on Netflix, original series on Netflix. I loved Daredevil. I thought that was so well done. I loved Sense8. Brian, you
haven't seen either of them.
Oh, you have got to see those.
I will. I absolutely will.
Yeah, I mean, they're both fantastic, and I'm so glad that both are picked up for additional seasons, and that Jessica Jones is coming out soon, which is the next series that's part of the whole thing that Marvel's doing with Netflix. Mm-hmm. And they have a few other series that are going to be coming out, and they'll all be running in tandem, and eventually they all converge, and all these people in the different series that Marvel is doing are going to be a single team. And that's just going to be absolutely awesome, because Marvel gets how to do this kind of show and having the freedom that they get by doing it on Netflix is great. I mean, like the fights that Daredevil has, they would never put that in a movie because the demographic isn't right. But they can do these very realistic fights in Daredevil. And there's one that they do where it's a single camera shot and it's a multi-minute fight. And there are no cuts. It's just amazing. And you couldn't do that in a movie. Anyhow.
Yeah, you could. What do you mean you couldn't do that in a movie? Ridiculous thing. Who are you, John Martellaro? That's the most ridiculous thing I've heard you say. They couldn't do it in a movie?
Let me finish my sentence. God. They couldn't do it in a movie in this way because of the realism that they put into the fight. This is not something that would fly in a Hollywood movie. I mean, they could totally do it. They won't. The studios wouldn't do it.
All right. Fair enough. And Mr. Robot is another incredible show. Brand new. The first season just ended while I was vacationing, actually.
I have to decide if I'm still talking to you now that you called me John Martellaro.
No. I love John. It's just every once in a while he'll say something that is just like completely unsupportable. You know that I'm his biggest fan.
I know. And I love John, too. He is absolutely awesome.
Anyway, all kinds of great TV shows on, and that's not even getting into the awesomeness of Ancient Aliens. Isn't it possible...
I started watching that on Netflix just because you'd been talking about it.
Oh, no.
And I sit on the couch and I rock back and forth. And I'm like, oh, you're kidding me. You're kidding me. Oh, you're absolutely kidding me. And what's up with the guy with the hair?
He has become a star because of that show, dude. He has his own shows now.
You're kidding me. Does he make enough money to comb his hair?
No, he deliberately does that, man.
Really?
George, what is his name? George, I can never remember his name.
That's
his
okay. First name is George. Anyway. Our listeners are going to let us know.
Yes, they probably will. They're actually probably yell at us for talking about TV for so long. My whole point is this. We are in a golden age of TV and you're missing out on it. So if Apple TV is Apple TV doing a TV streaming service is what it takes for you to get back into paying for TV, then I hope it comes sooner rather than later. That was a heck of a digression.
It really was.
For that point.
But man, did we finally pull it back together at the end.
Yeah, kind of, sort of. So assuming, let's just pretend we still have some listeners.
All right.
And let's
I'm
go on
to pretending.
Let's go on to our next topic. Steve Wozniak made some rather interesting comments last week on a post that Robert Scoble made on his Facebook.
Right. And these comments were related to the movie Steve Jobs that Aaron Sorkin wrote, Michael Fassbender is starring in.
And who's the director?
Danny Boyle.
Danny Boyle. Yeah.
Boyle, not Boyles.
Yeah, I do that all the time there. So it's all based on the Walter Isaacson biography that some people hate and that I love. And that
I
couldn't finish.
I don't hate it. I just grew weary of it.
No, you don't hate it, but lots of people hate it. Yeah. I've received plenty of emails from people who have said the book is terrible. Tim Cook doesn't like it. It seems like a lot of Steve Jobs' inner circle doesn't like it. We've talked about that.
Yeah, well, his inner circle could have actually talked with Walter Isaacson, and maybe the book would be different. We've talked about that, too.
Yeah, we talked about that, too. Well, yeah. And the movie, although the movie is based on the rights to the entire book, it's four moments in Steve Jobs' life visited as flashbacks, essentially.
Yeah, so
that's my understanding.
So it's
I haven't seen it yet.
Well, that's because neither one of us went to Telluride. What was it, like a week,
even
2 weeks
you're close.
Ago? I'm a lot closer
than you. Why do you hate her? Why do you hate our listeners that you wouldn't go to that?
I'm just a cold, cold man. I should have gone to Telluride. It would have been a lot of fun.
Yeah, you actually probably should have. But that's beside the point. We can... Steve Wozniak said he in an interview with Variety, Hollywood Variety. I've got it right here. Top Men.
I think it's Variety.
No, it's not. It's just not? Variety. No, it's Hollywood.
Hollywood Reporter?
No. Golly, gosh darn it. So The Verge covered it. And Deadline Hollywood. There it is.
Oh, anyway, okay.
I knew it. I had it here somewhere. The Verge covered it. And Steve Wozniak basically said this was the first Steve Jobs movie that he likes, that he approves of. And he thought that it captured the spirit of working with Steve Jobs. And that Robert Scoble mentioned the Verge piece covering the Deadline Hollywood interview. And that's where Steve Wozniak was commenting. There were just some really interesting aspects of this conversation, the things that you and I thought we could talk about.
Well, sure. I mean, first, it's interesting in that none of the other movies that have come out have gotten a Woz endorsement, and so that's a thing right there. And I found it interesting that Woz went on about how this captured the spirit.
Well, let's mention the thing I actually wrote about first.
Okay.
Before we go there, I thought, because that's probably the least important part of this conversation, but it's definitely still worth mentioning. I was fascinated by the fact that as he was writing about all this stuff, every time he would type out Apple II, Apple III, Lisa, or Next, or even Macintosh, he didn't ever call it the Mac, or seldom call it the Mac, he called it Macintosh. But he always used the specific nomenclature, the specific styling of the devices from that era. Like the Apple II is Apple close bracket, open bracket.
Yes.
And it's Apple // instead of Apple III.
Mm-hmm.
It's Lisa, all caps, and Next, of course, has the lowercase e and the capital NXT. And I was like... As other folks were focusing on the fact that he gave this movie the thumbs up, I was like, oh, that's so cute. He's such an engineer.
Yeah.
He takes the time to type this accurately. Now, and it's possible that he's typed it so many times it's faster for him. But for me, it takes more time to think about typing Apple bracket bracket than it does to type Apple II.
Well, he may have text expander snippets.
Yeah, I doubt that.
Really? I mean, he's a pretty slick guy.
Yeah, but he's been typing those things for a long time. It's probably muscle memory at this point.
Yeah, probably.
But anyway, it was just interesting. He is such an engineer. He is such an engineer. And even in a casual conversation on Facebook, he takes the time to do it right. And I love seeing that. It was interesting. It was, I'll say it, adorable.
Adorable. Yeah.
It was adorable. And I don't mean that in a belittling way. I'm not bagging on Mr. Wozniak at all. I love Mr. Wozniak. I think he's awesome. Matter of fact, I hate how many Apple fans today and how many Steve Jobs fans today are always so quick to dismiss Steve Wozniak because he just did a couple of minor things all those years ago. That drives me nuts.
And
Wozniak was a freaking genius.
He was.
And without him, Steve Jobs wouldn't have been able to do what Steve Jobs did.
No, he wouldn't have. I mean, without Wozniak, Apple would not have happened, period.
Yeah, there would be, you're right, there would be no Apple. Now, Steve Jobs may have found someone else to be his partner, so to speak. But that's not how it happened. As it is, the Apple that we know, the Steve Jobs that we came to know and love, the devices today that we know and love because of Steve Jobs, those all started with Steve Wozniak designing the Apple I by himself and then designing the Apple II by himself.
Yeah. I mean, that's amazing. He designed a full-on computer, and he had to write the software that would make the computers work. And did you ever hear the story about how when they were going to go show off the Apple II at some event, and they lost the code for that disk drive driver. So Wozniak is in a hotel room the night before rewriting the code from memory. And he did it, and it just worked.
And it worked. You got to love that.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And to be, I think one of the reasons why people are, or some people are quick to dismiss Wozniak. I mean, and I've seen it several times. Like anytime he said anything vaguely critical of Apple, right? Like the Apple fans come out and say that he's irrelevant, he doesn't matter, and what has he done? And they say all these insulting things. It's just really, really. It is wrong both factually and in spirit.
Well, I'm wondering how many of these people that are critical of Woz when he says something are people that didn't know Apple when Woz was an influence, and so they
I honestly, I think it's a mix, Jeff. I think that it's a mix of both new fans and older fans.
Yeah,
I think that. I don't know. I don't have any. Actually, I can't back that up. So that's a gut feeling.
Yeah, but it wouldn't surprise me if you're right, because there are many people that have been longtime Apple fans that also have this very jaded view on things.
That's true. And although I would honestly ask people, like, I know that some of the people who, by definition, some of the people who have said that have done some amazing things themselves. But some people may, in fact, want to examine what they have done before criticizing someone like Steve Wozniak for what he has done.
Yeah.
I'm being polite, but I'm being honest.
I think that there's a lot of people that look at the, I'll call it happy-go-lucky personality that Woz has and the irreverence that he has.
Mm-hmm.
And
the pranksterism,
he
has been critical of some things about Apple. And one thing that I disagree with him on is he dismisses closed and prefers open. And I think that they both have value.
Sure. Of course,
he's critical of closed. I'm not going to say he dismisses it.
Critical is a much better word choice.
You know, I mean, like, for instance, in this thread, see how I brought it back?
Nicely.
In this thread, he mentions a couple times about fighting with Steve over the Macintosh being closed. He wanted the Macintosh to have slots like the Apple II did. And he doesn't say it here, but I believe that I've read or watched him say in the past things about how the openness of the Apple II. The Apple II had multiple slots for developers to make cards.
Mm-hmm. It had 8 slots in it.
8 slots, right. And that was absolutely a part of its success. And that was something, because, you know, Steve Wozniak is this, he's an engineer. He's a tinkerer, right? He loves to tinker. He loves to play. He loves to make. And so he wanted Apple's computers to be accessible so that people could make themselves. And Steve Jobs wanted Apple's computers to get out of the way for you not to need to tinker with them.
Yeah, Steve was looking to make appliances.
Steve Jobs.
Thank you. Steve Jobs was looking to make appliances. Woz wanted to make the tinkering car where you could flip up the hood and do whatever you wanted.
Yeah, both valid approaches. I happen to prefer the end result of Steve Jobs' vision.
Yeah, it's very indicative of their personalities.
It absolutely is indicative of their personalities. And I don't know. I guess at this point we jump into some of the things he actually said.
That sounds
everything we just talked about was not stuff we said that we were going to talk about.
Yeah, but that's how we roll.
That is how we roll. All right. So some of the there were some interesting themes to me. One, let's just get the what I think was intended as a super negative one. Just get that one out of the way. He likened Steve Jobs to Donald Trump.
Yeah. Yeah. What it came down to was, I don't know, do you think arrogance is the right word? Not on Wozniak's part, but that's what he was comparing.
Well, what he was specifically comparing, and now I got to find it again. It's a good thing.
Good thing you had that right up, since that's what you wanted to talk about. Well,
there's actually, the problem is that these comments jump.
Yeah, and there was a lot that was said.
There was a lot that was said, and then there's stuff all over the place. Yeah, but he was specifically saying that Steve Jobs never apologized for being wrong. And he said, like Donald Trump. And the thing is that he's right about that. And part of it is because Steve Jobs wasn't interested in the past. He was always interested in the future. Now, rightly or wrongly, I'm not saying that makes it okay. Because, you know, in my opinion, you do apologize for when you were wrong.
You should apologize.
You should apologize. That's kind of like how I'm wired, but it wasn't how Steve Jobs was wired.
No.
And it's not how how Donald Trump seems to be wired either. But I don't think that they are in any way, there's a mean-spiritedness that I perceive in Donald Trump's inability, and a narcissism that in Donald Trump's inability to admit that he's wrong, that I don't think was ever a part of Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs just wasn't interested in the past.
No, it seems to me the only time he really looked back was when he recruited Walter Isaacson for the biography.
I'm going to argue with you.
Okay.
Check this out. Steve Jobs didn't look back by when he was hiring Walter Isaacson. He didn't hire Walter Isaacson. He just asked Walter to write his book. He recruited him. But he recruited Walter Isaacson to do the looking back for him because he still wasn't interested in doing it. Yeah. How do you like that?
That's interesting. And I totally get why you would do that, Mr. Mostly Pedantic.
Mostly. But in this particular case, I think the pedantry is absolutely essential.
I think he was doing two things here. He was looking forward and because he wanted this book to be out there. But to look forward through the book, he also had to look back so that he could recount, and he had to be retrospective so that he could recount the stories.
Most of the stories I don't think came from Steve.
Really?
Most of the past stories. I think the stuff that came from Steve were the talks they had about the goings on at that time.
Okay.
I think that most of the past in the book came from other sources.
All right. Well, in that case, I'll let you slide on this one.
Okay. Yeah. Actually, all right. Not only fair enough, appropriate.
All right. there you go.
So that it's an interesting comparison, and it almost makes you think that Mr. Wozniak is expressing some bitterness, especially when you start looking at. Especially when you start looking at this repeated theme that came from his comments, where he said, and I'm going to quote here, with Apple II money, he failed with the Apple III, the Lisa, the Macintosh, and next. Now, he said that a couple of different times in a couple of different ways. And what he's saying is that the successes of the Apple II
financed the failures of these other ventures.
Yes. Both from Apple and of course, you know, Apple did not own Next, but the money that Steve Jobs put into Next out of his own pocket was essentially derived from value that the Apple II gave to Apple Inc.
Mm-hmm. And it sure looks like that's a bone of contention for Wozniak.
Well, it does. You know, I've noticed over the years that Mr. Wozniak seems to bristle at the fact that the Apple II still does not get the credit that he thinks that it is due for financing Apple.
And it's interesting that it doesn't get the credit that it's due, because it was Apple's bread and butter. I mean, it was,
yeah.
That was their product. That was how they made money. And if the Apple II did not sell, then there wouldn't have been an Apple after that. And there certainly wouldn't have been a Lisa to fail, and there certainly wouldn't have been a Macintosh to stumble at first, but then grow and flourish later on. There wouldn't have been an opportunity for John Sculley to fumble with a message pad.
There wouldn't have been a personal computer revolution.
No, there wouldn't have been.
Well, actually, there would have eventually.
It would have been very different from what did happen, and we wouldn't be where we are today.
Right. We may actually have been someplace better, but I doubt that.
Yeah, I doubt that too. I mean
it's, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, how much of an influence did early Apple have on Amiga?
Well, a lot. And how much influence did Apple's success have on IBM?
Right.
To develop the quote-unquote PC, the personal computer.
Right. Yeah. I mean, would IBM have done their personal computer stuff? Would Amiga have come up with the computers that they did? I think if Amiga had been able to come up with their ideas independently, we'd be sitting here working at the Amiga Observer, not the Mac Observer.
That's possible. And Amiga fans will certainly tell you that. I've gotten into arguments with the Amiga fans.
I can imagine. I mean, the Amiga was great. The first nonlinear video editing system that I saw and got to play with was an Amiga.
Yeah.
And it was crazy awesome.
It was an amazing device for its day. So one of the first comments that was made was, and I'm quoting, "One thing nobody likes to point out is that John Sculley himself, as well as almost all of us at Apple, believed that the Macintosh was Apple's future. We all sacrificed the growing personal computer market, 10x over a decade, and MS got all of that growth." Microsoft, in other words, got all of that growth. Oh, he doesn't write out Microsoft. How interesting.
Oh, that's very interesting.
How interesting. All right, sorry, back to my quote. 10x over a decade, and Microsoft got all that growth in this belief. We, Sculley leading, had to work very hard for 3 years to make the Macintosh as successful in dollars as the Apple II had ever been, following Jobs' vision. The choices can be argued because you can never go back and say what decisions would have what results, but it was a business decision to save Apple as a company after the stock dropped by a third in about a day when the Macintosh failed to sell due to not much software. And what he's talking about is the decision to strip Steve Jobs of his position as head of the Macintosh division.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he's talking about. So going back to the quote, Steve Jobs wasn't pushed out of the company. He left. I supported him in his belief that he was made to create computers. But up until then, he'd only had failures at creation. He was good at productizing and marketing the Apple II, and the revenues financed the failures, Apple III, Lisa, Macintosh, and Next. This is not shown in the movie. After the Macintosh failure, it's fair to assume that Jobs left out of his feelings of greatness and embarrassment about not having achieved it. That is not shown either. This movie is more about Steve Jobs inside, his feelings about a lot of things, including how others thought of him, and some pushes to reform that in the end.
You know, and that's fascinating, because that's not the story we have about Steve Jobs leaving. It was the story we have is about the coup.
Well, yeah, some people misunderstand. Some people say that Steve was fired. Steve himself said he was fired.
But he was. I mean, he chose to leave.
He was fired from his position as head of Macintosh. He was stripped of that. And
yes,
I think that that's what Steve Jobs meant when he said in the Stanford speech that he was fired from, you know, how do you get fired from your own company? I believe he actually meant fired from that job. I don't think he was doing some revisionism there, although he was known for revisionism. So
yeah, that's true. And for him, it may not have been any different. I mean, getting stripped of his role to him may have equated to being fired.
Yeah. So and what happened? And this is established lore, right? This is like well understood. This is historical fact. The Macintosh had a great beginning, and then sales tanked because there was no software, as Woz mentioned, and the office stuff that Apple had been planning to do, the printer, right? Mm-hmm. The desktop publishing stuff. All of that wasn't ready yet.
Right.
And sales tanked, and when Apple announced that sales tanked, the stock tanked. And then meanwhile, Steve was a very, very divisive personality within the company. And he had created this us versus them culture between the Macintosh people and the Apple II people. And he did that to help fuel the Macintosh people to aspire to greatness. And almost everybody was complaining about Steve Jobs. And so John Sculley ended up deciding to decide with the factions within Apple that wanted Steve pushed out of the Macintosh division. So they stripped him of his responsibilities at the Macintosh division. They moved him to an offsite location where he couldn't interact with the other employees on a regular basis, and left him as chairman because they didn't want the world thinking that the creative genius and the visionary was gone.
Right. They exiled him, is what they did.
Yeah, absolutely. While leaving him as a figurehead. And he took a sabbatical and decided to quit. And he went to the board and said, I'm going to go do this other thing. I'm going to do a computer company that doesn't compete with Apple at all, because we're going to be going after higher ed. And I'm going to take a couple people. No big deal.
No biggie.
And he grabbed like five key people and split. And Apple thought about suing him and decided that the headlines would be bad, and didn't.
Right. And so then Steve took his money and created Next.
Yeah, sold all his Apple stock.
Mm-hmm.
Got some investors and started Next Computer. And then, you know.
And thanks to that, Tim Berners-Lee was able to create
the World Wide Web. Yeah.
Man, it's cool how these threads just kind of come together, and out of what looks like turmoil, all of a sudden there's this amazingly powerful thing that just happened.
Man, you've got to read The Innovators, Walter Isaacson's most recent book. And it's where he looks at all of the serendipitous meetings that led to so many of the great technical revolutions in computing, going back to I can't remember her name.
Ida Lovelace.
Ida Lovelace. Thank you.
Sorry, I wasn't sure where you were going, but
going back to her. So he's looking at not only successful partnerships, but he's also looking at the sort of serendipitous meetings that cause so many of those successful partnerships. And Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak are one of the ones that he looks at. It's a great book. You got to read that book.
All right, that one sounds really interesting to me.
For one thing, unlike the Steve Jobs biography, it's not a lot of history that you already know.
Sure.
I doubt that, at least.
But, yeah. Well,
I mean,
yeah.
Most of us don't know these things. Is what I meant by that. Whereas most of us knew a lot of the history of Steve Jobs, and you know him ripping off Wozniak on Breakout and spending time at Reed College. You know, these are all stories we knew.
Right. Yeah.
Speaking of, we're running out of time, but we should probably also mention that the thing about Breakout.
All right.
And we should also mention the thing about the movie. So let's make this quick. It's interesting to me that Woz has expressed. So the story is that Steve Jobs lied to Steve Wozniak about how much money he was paid for the development of Breakout, which was almost all Woz.
Right.
This was when Steve Jobs was working at Atari, and he got, Mr. Bushnell?
Yeah. That sounds right.
To agree to let him make Breakout. And Mr. Bushnell agreed and said, and said, here's what we'll pay you. And for every chip less than this number of chips that you use, you'll get a bonus of X amount. And it was like, I'm going to make some numbers up. I think it was like 35 chips, and that was the goal. And like Steve Wozniak ended up doing it was like 17. Something, those numbers might not be precise, but.
But it was a marked difference.
Yeah, because it was a work of genius, because Steve Wozniak is a genius. And then Steve Jobs was going to give half of the money to Steve Wozniak for doing it. Steve Wozniak didn't care about the money. He had a good gig at HP and he didn't care about money anyway. And Steve lied to him about how much he got and took the money and went on a trip. And Steve Wozniak he's expressed hurt at that story, but he's never condemned Steve Jobs for that. And he kind of did that again in this Robert Scoble thread where he's sort of like making excuses. Like Steve didn't have any money. He could have told me and I'd have let him have it all. I was always that way. And I had a job. One could say that we had an investment money. Basically once they had money that his relationship to it changed. But there's just, you know, all kinds of issues with Steve and his childhood and abandonment. And keep in mind that Steve was searching for his product success. It's just interesting. He essentially still won't condemn Steve Jobs for ripping him off.
Yeah.
And I think that speaks to what a good heart Mr. Wozniak has.
Yeah, I think so. All right, there's one other point you wanted to hit before we wrap up.
Yes, and that is the fact that Steve Wozniak loves this movie, even though he says that some scenes were made out of whole cloth. Does that sound familiar?
It sounds really familiar. He said the same thing about the Ashton Kutcher Steve Jobs movie.
But
he totally bagged on that movie and said it was horrible.
Because some of the scenes were made up of whole cloth.
Yeah.
That not quotes in either case. But basically, so he said, and the thing is that Steve Wozniak likes Steve Jobs because he says it captures the spirit of Steve. He says it captures the spirit of working with Steve.
Yeah, he even forgave when they put scenes in Steve Jobs where Wozniak is saying and doing things that Woz says, I didn't do that, nor would I ever do or say that.
But it's okay because those things happened, and they had to have someone say it.
Right.
Which, I mean, I get where he's coming from. I get why he's given it a pass, but it's fascinating because from my perspective, and I'm sure that he would disagree with this. I'm not in his mind, right? I'm sure that in his mind, his reasons for giving one a pass and not giving the Ashton Kutcher a film or any other film a pass is because the spirit thing is the important aspect.
Yeah, so clearly he doesn't see that Ashton Kutcher's movie captured the spirit.
Yeah, and he, you know, the acting, some of the acting, well, okay, actually, I think Ashton Kutcher was a great Steve Jobs, for what that's worth. But some of the rest of the acting and some of the rest of the writing in that film, I do not think were great.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I don't think they were good at all. As a matter, I don't understand, what's his name? Josh Gad.
Josh Gad.
Yeah, he was terrible. I like him as an actor a lot. I think he's a brilliant comedian, but I don't understand his Steve Wozniak role, and I don't understand.
I think it was horribly written.
Well, what was up with the hair? Why would they put that? Why, if they're going to put fake hair on someone, why put that fake hair on him to represent Steve Wozniak? It's weird. Why would they do that?
Yeah, I don't know. Seriously. Well, I mean, it felt more like they wanted to create a comic relief character. And so to give us the visual cue, here's the comedy.
Yeah, that made him look goofy.
Yeah.
So Woz said, the conversations I have with Jobs in the movie never took place, but they represent issues that were real and probably came out in other ways to and from Jobs. The movie shows a garage like it was an actual company. I'm shown debating 2 slots versus 8 slots in this garage when it was my Cupertino apartment in which that argument took place. I'm shown asking Steve to acknowledge Apple II engineers to the very end of the movie. I never did any such thing. After a shareholders meeting with the Apple II, where the Apple II wasn't even mentioned, I would have said nothing, but people in the Apple II division were so upset they were ready to quit, and I was their voice in a short phone call to John Scully. I suspect that the exchanges between myself and Jobs in the movie were actually between Scully and Jobs, probably referring to me. In real life, I felt the Macintosh intro was the most important event in personal computers ever. I also felt that Next was a big advance, but I'm shown saying to Steve otherwise in conversations that never happened. But you have to put the issues of the time into someone's voice, and I was chosen. I respect the jobs to the end. The acting in that direction is excellent. The jobs in this movie seems like the real jobs in many ways. There is an incredible Aaron Sorkin scene that is my favorite part. A discussion switching between a later time, although Scully never actually saw Jobs after the departure from Apple, so I'm guessing he's saying that they're showing a conversation between Steve Jobs and Scully that didn't take place.
Mm-hmm.
And the actual issues the board faced in turning Jobs' proposals down. This is the proposals that ended up with Jobs being stripped of his power, effectively reorging him. The dialogue is superb and on the mark. Although this story is debatable, and I'd have some negatives to add to parts, it is so well presented that you will all be glad to see this, and capitalize this, movie about Jobs.
That's quite an endorsement.
It is. It's interesting. It's really interesting. So we'll have the link to this Facebook post in the show notes.
Yes, we will.
That was a question.
No, that was a statement. You just didn't realize it yet.
Okay, well, that's good. Well, you do the show notes. All the time I'm like announcing things that'll be in the show notes, and you know.
And at my whim, I choose to put those things in or not.
Exactly. Exactly. Fascinating stuff. Honestly, I could probably talk about this for another hour because I do think Steve Wozniak is so interesting. And I think that this period of time, the 80s and Apple computer and Next and the 70s as well, it was such an interesting time in terms of the computer industry. But we can't talk for another hour.
No, not without upsetting the listeners that actually did stick around.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. We are at an hour and 7 minutes, and that's without the bumper.
Right. Okay. Well then how about if I go into that so we can be out soon? And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening and sticking with us through the whole show.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer, except for the stuff on the golden age of television. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
Stay subscribed, please.
We will see you online at the Mac Observer. Only digressions.
Hey, this is some good TV shows.
It's true.